For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder. A federal judge on Wednesday blocked the government from enforcing a controversial provision in the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act that would have permitted the government to place U.S. citizens in military detention indefinitely on mere suspicion of support for al-Qaeda or groups deemed to be associated with it. Signed into law by President Obama last December, the statute was successfully challenged by seven prominent public figures, including Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chris Hedges, renowned linguist and political critic Noam Chomsky, and America's best-known whistleblower and lifelong peace activist Danielle Ellsberg, who released the top-secret Pentagon Papers in 1971. Our guest today is Carl Mayer, one of the attorneys who brought the case against the government for these plaintiffs. Carl Mayer runs the Mayer Law Group. He's also the author of several books, including Shakedown and Public Domain, Private Dominion. He's a former law professor and served as special counsel to the New York State Attorney General. The New York Times has called him a populist crusader and maverick lawyer. Carl Mayer, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
You represent a distinguished group of plaintiffs. Tell us why these plaintiffs challenged the law and on what grounds they did so.
Yes, well, the plaintiffs have often been referred to as the Freedom Seven, and they're an interesting mix of the people you mentioned who are veteran activists like Chris Hedges and Danielle Ellsberg and Noam Chomsky. The other plaintiffs are young founders of groups like Occupy London. Kai Wargallo is a founder of Occupy London. And another young person named Alexa O'Brien worked with U.S. Day of Rage, which worked very closely doing nonviolent training for Occupy Wall Street. And then Tangerine Bolin works with a group called Revolution Truth. They work closely with another group of young activists called Demand Progress. So it was very nice to see that you not only have veteran activists working, but young and enthusiastic leaders of the Occupy movement and other social justice movements in the United States. Briefly, their concern with this law, and I think many Americans' concern with this law, is it fundamentally violates their free speech rights and their due process rights. Because what this law that President Obama signed and the Congress passed does is it allows the government to put in military detention without a lawyer, without a right to trial by jury, indefinitely, if that person is suspected of, quote, substantially supporting the Taliban, al-Qaeda, or associated forces, including associated forces who are enemies of our allies. So those terms are all so vague and so broad that Chris Hedges and Ellsberg and the other plaintiffs believe that in their work as journalists and activists, they could be detained at any time by the United States military. In other words, a black van could come for them in the middle of the night. People could spirit them off to a military detention center, and they would not have any of the constitutional safeguards that we take for granted in this country.
As you point out, these terms are so vague. Substantial support for al-Qaeda, the Taliban, associated forces, as you say, anywhere, associated forces allied, arrayed against not only the U.S., but other countries, our allies. How have courts been interpreting that, and how did these particular plaintiffs think that they would be affected? Is it because of their work as journalists or some other thing?
Well, in the case of, we can run through a couple of them to give you an example. And I think the young people who are listening would be surprised to hear this. Kai Wargallo was one of the founders of Occupy London. During that time, it came out in a bulletin that was passed around by the City of London Police that Occupy London had been put on a list of terrorist organizations right next to al-Qaeda. And that police bulletin was circulated throughout the city. So there was a real fear that Wargallo and others had that just for their political activism, they could be labeled terrorists. And as such, as such, they could be captured under the ambit of the NDAA, which is often called the Homeland Battlefield Bill. It's so called that because, in fact, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham straightforwardly said, we consider America to be a battlefield in the war on terror. And our point is, it's not a battlefield, it's a democracy, and that's why laws like this can't stand. So that's one example, Kai Wargala. Another young plaintiff, Alexa O'Brien, who worked closely with Occupy Wall Street, she uncovered a trove of emails from military contractors who were private investigators but had contracted frequently with the FBI and Homeland Security and other security agencies. And those emails suggested that her group had ties to Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups, even though that was not true. Alexa O'Brien is an American, an Irish-American citizen, born in this country. A group that she founded was devoted to nonviolence, and yet these false rumors are being spread by former military people who work for private contractors that somehow her organization had ties to Al-Qaeda and Middle Eastern terrorists.
So the law actually allows, it sounds like the laws allow governments at their discretion to define terrorist activity however they want to. Is that what you're suggesting? Because it's not actually defined?
Well, because the word, what does the phrase substantially support terrorist groups mean?
That's a good question.
Well, right. And does it mean, and it's actually not just terrorist groups, it's any group that is, quote, engaged in hostilities with the United States of America or its coalition partners. So there's no definition. Mm-hmm. There's no definition to substantially support, and there's no definition to engage in hostilities. I've never seen in 25 years of practicing law, I've never seen a law that doesn't have a definitional section. Totally vague, totally overbroad, and that means that it violates the free speech First Amendment rights that all these people have. So Chris Hedges testified on the stand. I put him on the stand, and he testified that he has frequently reported on the activities of Al-Qaeda, of 17 other groups that are on the list of the State Department of U.S. terrorist groups that are monitored by the State Department. And he's frequently reported on them. He's written opinion pieces on them. And he himself has been detained at airports, and he was detained once in Afghanistan. And he doesn't know why, but he testified credibly that he had a reasonable fear of being detained by the United States government under this law. And Judge Forrest ruled that it is the chilling effect of the statute, the chilling effect of making these journalists and activists think that they could be detained, that is what is violative of the First Amendment. So this mm-hmm. was an enormous victory for democracy and for civil liberties in America. And we have been calling on the Obama administration to drop their appeal to this case. Because when the president signed this, in a signing statement, he said that he had substantial and serious reservations about the law. Because it goes against 200 years of American history to allow the military to police our streets. And in fact, the president said it as much when he sent a letter to the Senate when the Senate was considering this bill. So we have a system of civil laws in this country, and what the president and Congress are trying to do is to override that and make military detention and military law paramount. And that is something that is un-American. It is against our most fundamental liberties and undermines the Constitution. And
Chris Hedges, of course, is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, author, war correspondent, bureau chief, Middle East bureau chief for the New York Times, who specialized in American and Middle Eastern politics, very prominent journalist. I wanted to ask you specifically, though, about the provisions regarding U.S. citizens. The statute itself is actually silent about those, if I'm to understand correctly.
Well, that's right. So and that's why the judge ruled in granting the injunction that the statute could apply to U.S. citizens. There's nothing in the four corners of the statute that suggested that it couldn't apply to U.S. citizens, and that's why citizens like Hedges, O'Brien, and Tangerine Bolin are all potentially subject to this law.
The Obama White House, as you pointed out, submitted a, or Obama himself wrote, issued a signing statement, of course, which will not have any binding effect on future presidents. But the Obama White House initially objected to this military detention provision of the bill, at least as applied to U.S. citizens. But Glenn Greenwald, a columnist for Salon.com and other critics, have pointed out at the time that when the White House was threatening to veto this bill, what it found objectionable was that it constrained executive discretion. He writes that Senator Carl Levin, who is one of the authors of the bill with Senator John McCain, has several times disclosed that it was the White House which demanded removal of a provision in his original draft that would have exempted U.S. citizens from military detention. So it's
right.
It's not the, clear that, that...
That's right. The government is trying to... give itself, to arrogate to itself as much power as it can.
Complete discretion.
Right. It is, and that and that's the point I made in court to Judge Forrest. It is when there is vagueness and discretion, that's where due process ends. Because as long as it's vague and as long as the executive branch has discretion, you can't know what your rights are. And if you don't know what your rights are, and if you could be subject to military detention or a military trial rather than a civilian trial, that is the essence of a due process violation of the Constitution. So it's not just the First Amendment, but it's also the Fifth Amendment, which guarantees people due process. And due process means that all these people should be entitled to their day in a court to be tried in front of a jury, their peers. This law tries to take that away from them, and that's why the judge struck it down. And that's why... In her opinion, she wrote, these are some of the most fundamental issues in American democracy, because there's nothing more fundamental than the government asserting that it has the right to take away someone's liberty, potentially forever, because people can be detained until, quote, the end of hostilities. There's no end to this war, so-called war on terror. It's been going on for 12 years now, and there's no end to it. So potentially someone could be detained indefinitely. And it's that type of vagueness and lack of definition that makes this statute frightening. You know, this is one of only a number of major civil liberties rollbacks under both President Bush and President Obama. You know, starting with the USA Patriot Act, but going on through the wiretapping of American citizens. One of the most dangerous, I think, was the Obama administration's position on the targeted assassinations by the president. I don't know if you...
We've talked about that here, sure.
...on your program, but
yes.
It's very similar to this in that Attorney General Holder in that case said quite clearly, due process doesn't mean judicial process, meaning that the executive branch, the president, can decide whether or not it is appropriate to assassinate an American citizen. And, oh, by the way, you U.S. courts, don't bother with this. It's not in the hands of the courts. Well, that's nonsense. Since the time of the Magna Carta...
We seem to have lost our guest. Hold on just a moment. Carl Mayer, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. My apologies.
No problem. We're happy that you rejoined us.
Okay.
So where were we? You were talking about other laws passed... by the Obama administration that seemed to build on the momentum created during the Bush administration. You yourself, as an attorney, have worked also on warrantless wiretapping. And I'm wondering about the free speech, the potential chilling effect on free speech of FISA, which, of course, is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that allows warrantless wiretapping, as it's been amended. And... How does that affect our ability to speak freely, to use the internet, et cetera? Would you like to say something about that?
Sure. That's an excellent question. And actually, Chris Hedges is involved in another lawsuit brought by the ACLU. It's a lawsuit called Amnesty International versus Clapper. And in that lawsuit, there was a challenge to FISA, or the warrantless wiretapping program of the Bush administration, which has been continued by the Obama administration. And again, without custody without judicial review and without warrants, this obviously has a very chilling effect on free speech. And the Second Circuit, which is the appeal court in New York, which is the next stop on the Supreme Court, sided with Chris Hedges and said, in fact, the First Amendment prohibits that, and it does have a chilling effect on free speech. This is now gone up to the Supreme Court. And we used the opinion in Clapper in our case challenging the NDAA. So it's all part and parcel of a rollback of civil liberties in this country. And I'm glad that finally we had one judge stand up and say, no, this is not acceptable. This is an undermining of our constitutional. And I hope this will be an important turning point where we get back our civil liberties.
I'd like to ask you something else, actually, about this case or about the law and your challenge to the law. The law also, while it permits the indefinite military detention of U.S. citizens, it requires the holding in military detention, according to my understanding, of non-citizens, people who are not citizens and who are not legal residents. Do I have the law correctly, and was that part of the law challenged by you or others?
Yeah, that's a separate provision, and we didn't represent. There's a separate category for non-U.S. citizens who are considered enemy combatants or have taken more specific acts against the United States.
Not just those suspected of terrorism?
Right, exactly. So we did not challenge that act. We didn't have, there may be some challenges to it, but we didn't have clients who would come forward to us. We may, in the future, bring some of those challenges.
In light of go ahead, sorry.
Well, but one of our other plaintiffs is a member of Iceland's parliament. Her name is Birgitta Jónsdóttir. She's actually a very interesting person. She's one of Iceland's leading poets and was elected as a member of parliament is sort of a third-party ticket. It's a social justice party called The Movement. And she was involved in with WikiLeaks and WikiLeaks' production of a film called Collateral Murder. And that film had depicted the firing on civilians by an American helicopter in Baghdad. And in that incident, two reporters were killed. And because of this...
Made public by Bradley Manning, correct?
What's that?
That film or that incident was made public by... Private
Correct.
Bradley Manning.
That was one of the things that Bradley Manning allegedly had made available as part of a tape, and she'd worked on that film. Because of that, the Justice Department subpoenaed her Twitter accounts, and the Icelandic Foreign Ministry advised her that she ought not to fly to the United States because of the Justice Department's action. And so she was one of our plaintiffs as well. And our argument was that it chills her free speech and undermines her right to due process to have the Justice Department go after her Twitter accounts like that. Because they not only subpoenaed her Twitter accounts, but they also, as part of that, subpoenaed her bank information, her private credit card information. And so you can see how far we've come from right after 9/11, the president was authorized to use force against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and people who specifically committed the atrocities of 9/11. And now we're in a situation where a member of the Icelandic parliament, who's a poet, Iceland is one of our allies, and the Justice Department is going after a person such as that, and potentially they could be detained under this new law. It is so far afield from the original purposes of authorizing force to go after terrorists, that it means that this law is entirely it's out of control. It's vague. It's is unconstitutional, and the fact that a federal judge struck it down is a huge victory.
And go ahead.
By the way, your listeners can go to our website, which is stopndaa.org, if they want to help with the lawsuit. We have had people all over the country volunteer. Our law firm website is carlmayer.com. We have been calling on the Obama administration to drop their appeal to this lawsuit. They have now lost four times in front of a federal judge. They lost on the preliminary injunction. They lost on a motion for reconsideration of the preliminary injunction. They lost on the permanent injunction. And then just on Friday, they asked the judge to stay her injunction, and she declined to do so.
I have a question about that. First, I wanted to ask you if you were expecting an appeal to the Supreme Court, which is might be a daunting prospect given the current composition of the court. I also wanted to ask you if what the effect of the law was. Does this judge's permanent injunction, which was issued on Wednesday, does this apply, this bars the government from relying on the law to detain people indefinitely without trial? Is that hold true for the law as enacted or enforced anywhere in the United States? Because, of course, this is a Southern U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York.
That's right. Well, in their motion for reconsideration, the government tried to suggest that this is a narrowly limited to New York. The judge flatly rejected
that. Really?
This injunction applies everywhere in the United States, and in every district in the United States, Justice Department in their papers that they filed yesterday suggested that the reach of the statute actually could apply overseas. It's unclear whether that's true. I think that the State Department is engaging in a bit of hyperbole, but it certainly applies to anyone, any United States citizen in the United States. So, if anyone hears of or hears of any of this activity, they ought to, again, get in touch with us at stopnda.org or carlmayer.com. It was quite extraordinary during the hearing in front of Judge Forrest. She asked the government flat out whether they've detained people under this law. The attorneys for the government said, we don't register and keep track of why we detain people. And to which the judge responded, meaning that you could be in contempt because you could be detaining people under this law and we wouldn't know it. And the government didn't have an answer to that. And we've been seriously contemplating moving for contempt because it appears from their latest papers that they're now claiming that the president can't adequately carry out his war power duties without this law. And if that's the case, it means they are detaining people under this law.
Do you expect an appeal?
What's that?
Do you expect an appeal to the Supreme Court?
Well, they've already appealed to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals,
mm-hmm.
off Manhattan, New York. That is the next stop to the Supreme Court, the last stop before the Supreme Court. I expect, certainly if we lose the appeal, we will ask the Supreme Court to take the case. I fully expect now that the Obama administration has made it clear in the last 48 hours that they're doubling down on opposing civil liberties in America. They are doing everything possible to overturn this opinion.
Why are they doing this, do you think? Why? I guess here's what I'm wondering. The administration basically argued that they already had the authorization. This is, again, what I understand. Some of the earlier arguments, at least, was that the Obama administration claimed that it already had the authorization to do what the statute contemplates, not sort of acknowledging the expansion of the possible targets of this law. But in arguing that, this was in the original defense authorization, or the authorization to use force back in 2001. Now, back in 2001, what was contemplated was only Al-Qaeda or the perpetrators of the 9/11 attacks and the countries that harbored them. Now we have all these other groupings. Was this eventuality of this law, do you think, that this was contemplated back in 2001? In other words, what is the origin of this expansion? Has a path been made for this, or is this something that's just kind of been a slippery slope phenomenon?
It's not a slippery slope. I think it's been an intentional power grab by...
That's my question. Yep.
It's been an intentional power grab, first by the Bush administration, and then made worse by the Obama administration, to expand executive power to the max, to overreach, to try to intimidate the federal judiciary, to try to ignore the federal judiciary. The original AUMF, the Authorization for Use of Force, which was passed shortly after 9/11, as you said, targeted very narrowly the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and people participating in 9/11. And then gradually, the executive branch realized they wanted to pick up more people and more people. And it wasn't just the Taliban. Maybe it was members of Hamas. Maybe it was members of the Muslim Brotherhood. Maybe it was members of other groups in the Middle East. Maybe it was, you know, domestic dissidents in the United States, like members of the Occupy Wall Street movement, or at least target them or monitor them, or however they may have perceived their ability to exercise their power. And then it sort of cascaded until, by the time you got around to the NDAA, you had politicians on both parties trying to compete with one another to be the toughest on terrorism. And so they passed this law, which is an abomination, that declares that our democracy is a battlefield. Our democracy is not a battlefield.
In fact, that's the name of the bill. Isn't it called the Homeland Battlefield Bill? Wasn't it originally called that?
It was referred to that by Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, and by some Democrats as well.
He actually said something quite scary at the time. He said, if you're an American citizen and you betray your country, you're not going to be given a lawyer. That's an actual quote. Now, of course, he's assuming from the outset that a defendant is guilty.
Well, that's right.
For starters.
That's the essence of a due process violation, and that's exactly what occurred here. And that's why the judge found this to be unconstitutional. This is this battle could accelerate. We could wind up in the Supreme Court in a matter of weeks. We expect the Justice Department, and we're breaking news on your program here, Amy. The Justice Department at 10:20 last night sent a letter to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals and to Judge Forrest, indicating that first thing Monday morning they will be filing papers seeking an emergency interim stay of Judge Forrest's ruling before the Second Circuit in Manhattan. They're going to be working through the weekend. So the Obama administration is doubling down and working overtime at the Justice Department to do everything it can to preserve the NDAA and to undermine civil liberties in America. And where our team is working as hard as we can to oppose them. So that's where the battle is at the moment. I expect you'll be hearing about it next week as the Second Circuit takes it up. And once the Second Circuit takes it up, either way they rule, I imagine before the Supreme Court, if the Supreme Court elects to hear it.
There you have it. The government seeking an emergency stay of Judge Forrest's decision in the Second Circuit. Thank you, Carl Mayer, for joining us today. It's been great having you join us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Carl Mayer, one of the attorneys who won a permanent injunction blocking enforcement of a provision in the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act that would have permitted the detention without trial of U.S. citizens suspected of supporting terrorism. For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder.